Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is the Gypsy Musher. My name is Robert Forto, and on the line we have our host, Hugh Neff, coming off a 340-mile trip up from Toke to Eagle and back in the beautiful wild country of Alaska. Hugh, how's it going?
Recovering still. It was quite the workout. Anybody that's been up on the Taylor Highway, top of the world highway, knows it's quite hilly and great training for dogs as well as humans. A lot of folks, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, you do a lot of thinking on the trail, and I think it's funny how a lot of humans tend to come up with their New Year's Eve resolutions, and they always, you know, want to go on diets after the holidays because they've been eating so much. And I thought to myself, why don't more people go on diets before the holidays? And so I know I got a big school tour coming up, and I know how those teachers like to feed me, and I'm visiting a lot of friends over the holidays, so I'm going to try to get in shape before I head out.
Hey, that sounds good. I know you're heading down to the lower 48 towards the middle of the month to hit that school tour. What is the plan of that? I know we've talked about it a lot on this show, but we do have several new people coming in every week to listen. What is the deal with the school tour here in December?
I'm doing five or six shows in South Dakota, Rapid City, Sioux Falls, and then I'm heading up to visit a lot of mushing folks up in the Duluth area, which I've never really been to. That'll be exciting. And then going through Wisconsin and spending the holidays with my buddies just outside of Milwaukee. And my buddy Mike Bakel is taking me to the Bears-Packers game. So it's going to be quite the whirlwind journey, but it's a lot of fun. But, you know, not as much fun as being on a sled, that's for sure. Heading to Eagle last week was just an epic adventure from, you know, just the workout to the weather to the trail. It was just a lot of fun, and you know, you're not setting any speed records out there. I think the more I've been around, as far as training goes, I'm never in a hurry anymore. I'm concentrating on developing the animals, not only their bodies but their spirits as well. And the beauty of this 350-mile run is I had a 20-dog team, then my buddy Jesse had a 17-dog team. He had six of my main older dogs, and then I had the younger dogs as well as a few vets. But out of my 20-dog team and 350 miles, I didn't have to put one dog in the sled from being tired. And what was phenomenal about that was I had just recently acquired a few dogs from John Baker, yearlings, and I decided to bring one of them with because it looked like it was a little bit more developed physically. A boy I call Kotz, a big black wolf-looking dog. And Kotz made it the whole way. My buddy Jake Berkowitz said that he had been just running him four or five times a week, 20-mile runs. And that really is my mind thought when it comes to training now. I think what I call training is almost like wind sprints. I don't really push them very hard. I give them lots of breaks. And then I like to go on big adventures, get them out of their element, let their minds develop. I think a lot of life, whether you're human or animal, has to do with what you experience out there. So I like to get the dogs out of the element of just being around the dog yard and get them on the road. And obviously chasing after caribou tends to keep the dogs quite happy, and that's what I love about being on the Taylor Highway because there are caribou by the hundreds everywhere.
You know, I'm looking forward to hearing some of these adventures about your trek last weekend over the Thanksgiving holiday. But before we do, we have to talk a little bit about some Iditarod news. I know that yesterday was the last day for entries for the Iditarod, and it said on the article in the Anchorage Daily News today that 23 of the top 30 mushers last year are returning, and I know that you're one of them. You were in that top group last year. Can you tell our listeners, because of course they follow the Iditarod big time, what's going on in 2012 Iditarod? What do you think is going to happen with some of these new guys as well as these old veterans, including Dan Seavey, who's entering the race this year?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought Mr. Seavey's name up because he's definitely an icon. That whole family's just pretty unique and pretty amazing. There were rumors a couple of years ago that Dan Seavey and Ramey Reddington were going to be doing the Quest, which I thought would have been awesome. I'd like to see some of those old-school Iditarod guys try doing the Quest. You know, right before Joe Reddington passed away, he actually had signed up for the Quest. And, you know, the Iditarod's amazing, and we all love Iditarod, but, you know, it's about Alaska, and it's about the North, and it's about getting out there and doing something different every year and not just doing the same routine. And that's what's cool about Mr. Seavey. You know, he hasn't done it in a few years, and to see him back, all these older veteran Iditaroders, like anybody who uses the word retire as a musher is somebody I really don't care to be around that much, because I think Joe Reddington, as far as Iditarod goes, set the precedent as far as, you know, he didn't even do his first Iditarod until he was like 56, so and he's doing it up until he's 80, so, you know, Mr. Seavey, in some ways, you know, he's got quite a career in front of him still if he wants it. And I know Mr. Seavey, he's always the first guy when you get off the stage. He's right there to shake every musher's hand. And his family's had a profound influence on the race. So I think it's awesome. And, you know, I think what would be really cool one of these years if we could get Mitch Seavey's wife to do the race, because I think we talk so much about the men of that family, and a lot of people don't realize what a profound effect she's had on that operation, because the Seaveys really are an operation and not just a family. They're quite amazing what they've done throughout the years. So it's exciting. And as far as, you know, the newer mushers and all that, I'm always willing and look forward to meeting new folks from around the country and who are into, you know, achieving their dreams and appreciating Alaska and celebrating the Iditarod or whatever race we're doing. But it's like watching the Iditarod video last year. As a musher, as a competitor, you should really just, you know, more than anything, be focused on your dogs, their care, and, you know, what the trail is ahead of you more than what everything else is going on, because it's like life in a way. If you're always worried about keeping up with the Joneses, then maybe you lose a little bit of who you are. And I'm always trying to discover who I am. So that's why I'm not, you know, I'll try to help newer kids out when I can, like Jesse Holmes I'm helping out right now. He's a promising kid who, 29-year-old, wants to start getting into the racing scene a little bit, just needs a little bit of a help and assistance as far as figuring out the scene and all that. But he's going to be something to watch here in a couple of years. He's got that energy that I can just sort of see in people, say like a Brent Sass. And you need that energy if you're going to be doing this year in, year out. Not every musher is probably as loud and you know, boisterous as I am with their passion for what they're doing, but all these other mushers, whether it's a John Baker or some of these other guys that are a little bit quieter, they still have that passion, but they just sort of keep it bottled up within. So, yeah, the more I don't even know how many people signed up for Iditarod.
I think I think 66 was my recollection to that. So a
nice.
Decent field anyway. It's not the numbers of the, you know, the early 2000s, but definitely a decent field there. My only other point to make on Iditarod, Hugh, is, you know, the buzz on Facebook to all the mushers talking. They're talking about how this winter has been a little bit different than most. I know Dee Dee Genre was talking the other day that she has been training more, you know, in the month of November than she usually does before the beginning of the year, just with all the snowfall and things in.
Yeah. Good for you guys down there.
Yeah, down here. So how do you think that affects, whether it be Iditarod or Quest or even some of the mid-distance guys, with getting out this early to train, you know, on the sled and put in a bunch of miles? Do you think that helps or hurts in the long run, getting this early of good snow cover?
Well, you know, it's all about training as well as allowing your dog's bodies to recover as well. Like I just did, 50 more miles than the Copper Basin or the Cusco or any other 300-milers. So my dogs need some time off, you know, 5 to 7 days to let their bodies heal. And then I just don't start popping on big miles on them again. I do small little, you know, almost like being a sprint musher. I'll just do a, you know, 15, 20-mile run. I'm not going to do super huge runs again, even though – I am going to be going to Tanana in about 8 to 10 days, but that's with my younger dogs. And the reason I'm doing that is not only is it an annual pilgrimage I make to visit the Earhart families and my friends in Tanana, but to get these younger dogs more experience. I won't be bringing the older dogs on that trip. And it's a chance to visit my buddy Brent and all my friends and Joey Reddington, folks in Manly. I think it's great. I think that it's great that all those folks down there are getting on sleds at an earlier time of year than they're used to. As long as, you know, they give the dogs, you know, time off as well, which I'm sure, you know, obviously Dee Dee knows a lot more about dog mushing than I do. All y'all down there, I'd say if anything, it'd be fun to see more small-time weekend races for the younger dogs. You know, 8-10-dog teams, little 20-to-40-mile race if possible. And, you know, I guess a lot of people are into racing for money. That's not my gig. But just racing for experience for the dogs would be good, too, you know, and get them around other dog teams. So I think, if anything, this is going to benefit mushers with younger dogs that need that experience about around being around humans and other dogs.
I totally agree there. So let's get into this. To this adventure you've been leading up to. I know you had a lot of people following you on Facebook, and you put up some pretty cool pictures this past week. You did a heck of a long run in terms of regular mushing guy standards. You know, 340 miles in a weekend is a race, like you said, to most folks. That's what they train for all year, but you're doing it as a fun run. Of course, you're Iditarod guy, Yukon Quest guy. This is, you know, your bread and butter. But tell us about this. What goes into something like this? Is this something you just load up the truck and go? Is this something you plan out? What's kind of the behind the scenes of this story before we get into it?
Yeah, we load up the truck with and the dog trailer with 40 dogs. It's about a 10-mile drive. It isn't that far. Some of the younger dogs hadn't had much experience in, you know, being in a truck, so that was good for them. And then the Taylor Highway, you know, it's just hills. And we're talking hills that blow away Iditarod or Quest. I mean, we're talking hills that go for 4 to 7 miles at a time that take over an hour to get up Mount Fairplay, and that's at the end of a 300-mile run. So just patience is what I'm doing a lot, stopping the dogs, obviously snacking a lot. I love to get out to villages like Eagle, Circle, just other folks that live along the Yukon River and places. Because, you know, we do a lot of talk about Iditarod or Quest or whatever, but folks who aren't mushers have to realize that there's a lot of great dog people. I mean, some of the best dog men I know aren't famous celebrity mushers. Wayne Hall's one of them. He's done the Iditarod, and he's the guy that I went and visited. He got the Challenge of the North Award. He also finished with every dog in his team as a rookie, trapline dogs. And to go out and hang out with a guy like Wayne is just, it's a pleasure and it's a privilege. And fellows like him, Mike Sager, another guy, old school fellow that's been running dogs from Eagle, Stans Ray's a guy that I used to train and respect a lot of, Tanana. So just because you're not a famous celebrity dog musher doesn't mean that most of these folks who live out in the bush, you know, they could survive a lot easier off the land than, you know, a lot of the folks that try to do Iditarod once or twice. So that's why I like getting out there and to enjoy the – I've been over most of the road before, but there's a few sections I hadn't checked out before, and it was really neat to see, you know, lots of caribou. Jesse saw 4 wolves. I tried to do this a little bit earlier in the year. People think this might be a bit earlier. They might think I'm peaking my dogs or whatever, but I'm not really necessarily pushing them that hard. That's not what I'm my objective here. I'm trying to get experience on them and see, you know, who the standouts are. And that was a great way to check that out. But I didn't realize that the weather was going to be what it was. And I was hoping, you know, maybe 10, 20 below. But when we got to Eagle, it was actually about 40 to 50 below.
Wow.
And we did the trek, took a 4-hour break, and then we took a 3-hour break. And then we actually got to Wayne Hall's, and we stayed at his place for 2 nights. So it wasn't a straight race per se. They had plenty of break in between where we could fatten them up a little bit, get them nice and rested up. The only problem was that team that we had took them to Eagle, we had to go downriver to Wayne's, which is about 6 miles to the north. And it's funny to say that, going downriver, but you're actually going north, but that's just the way the river goes in there. It recently been frozen about a week, but Wayne had already put in trail for us. It was a little sketchy. I'm used to jumble ice, so that wasn't too big of a problem. The issue was leaving his place with a fresh 20-dog team going down a hill about an eighth of a mile before we got to the river. That was a little hairy, and that we got lucky, put it that way, that we didn't get hurt more. One of us had a little bit of a bruised knee. I had a bum arm. But the dogs were fine, and I guess for me personally, that means more than I'd rather have myself bruised up a bit than have any issues with dogs. And then the run back, a lot lighter sleds, because what we had done as we went to Eagle from Toke is we had cached stuff along the way at different spots, and didn't make sense to carry it all if we were going to be using it on the way back, you know, through those hills. And then we'd pick up the stuff as we went along, took a few more breaks, and then we actually stayed in Chicken at a fellow named Ray's there that was invited us to hang out with him for a bit, and we rested up, and then we had a nice decent run in, but it was still fairly strenuous. You know, these there's three or four mountain passes that are up to 4,000 feet, and that can be a bit of a workout. But for me, it was very uplifting to see so many young dogs that were really feeling it for the first time, you know, and they're really digging it, because it was an adventure, and that's really for me what Mushin's all about.
So the route you took, the Taylor Highway, is that a well traveled route? Were you running along the road there, or were you on trail?
Yeah, we're right on the road. It's not maintained in the winter. You see a little bit of traffic the first 15-20 miles. You know, people gathering wood or hunters, whatever. Or not hunters necessarily, but people scouting out the area for when season opens up. You have to imagine, and most mushers could never really do this, but I've been around the block enough where I know how to work the situation. There's only a couple inches of snow on this highway. You know, they haven't had a lot of snow this year. So having a double sled is easier to work with one person staying on the sled while the other one dealt with booties or switching dogs around or what have you. If we wanted to hook off, we would do that at bridges along the way, which worked great. I had my race in, you know, older Hans Gott sleds that were a little bit speedy. What was amazing about Jesse Holmes was he had just built his sled the night before.
Oh, wow.
And Jesse's this story is too hard to believe, but it's true, man. And that's the beauty of Alaska. A lot of the stories up here are amazing. So this kid built a sled. It's old school freight sled. The thing's huge. It was built to carry up to 500 pounds. As Jesse was taking the dog, the sled off the dog box, he unfortunately had too much weight in it. And when the sled hit the ground, he actually broke the right runner of the sled.
Oh,
and
man.
This is it gets better, man. This is a classic line that he told me that I'll always remember. He looks at me and he goes, "I might have busted. I might only have one runner on this sled, but if Lance Mackey can ride a sled on one runner, so can I." And I just started laughing because the punchline of that whole joke is that when Lance had that sled that he busted the runner on going down the gorge there the first time he won Iditarod, that was actually a dog sled that he had borrowed from me. So,
oh man, you
know, it's funny how the world that works sometimes. But yeah, that kid finished. He had to run up pretty much every hill. He's only 29, so he still has a little bit more energy than I do. But I was really proud of him, and he's just learning the ropes. He actually won a race in Nenana last year. And so he's getting help from a lot of different native folks in that area, and I wish him well, and looking forward to seeing how he does this year.
So the rule of the day there, Hugh, is make sure you test out your equipment before you go on a long run, I guess.
And be very careful how you take a sled off of a dog box or a dog truck. Sled or, you know, a dog coming out of the dog box. Sometimes those dogs like to fling out of there. And you have to be very careful that you can't let them jump out too fast. They might get hurt. So, yeah, just be patient. Don't always, you know, be methodical. You have to move in an efficient manner. But when you're hooking up a team, you know, be cautious. Don't just be focused on the dog that you're dealing with, whether it's booties or harnesses. But keep an eye on the rest of the team. Make sure they're not chewing lines or trying to bite their booties off. Or, you know, when you're out in the wild, you have to always keep your eyes aware of everything around you. And fortunately for me, I've been doing this racing long distance for 10 years now, and so I don't really think about it as much. It's just more instinct.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the track itself. I know you had one picture on Facebook with your feed bags there, and it looked like a sponsorship photo for Red Ball. Were you doing any cooking there? Were you feeding just dry kibble? What was going on in terms of the routine there?
Oh, we mix it up. We got the Red Ball. We soak. You know, they need that as a steady part of their diet. In fact, they had an interesting study I was listening to on the news yesterday about how dogs that are just fed fish on the river systems of Alaska actually have too much mercury in their system, and it's really not as beneficial. And those folks that live on the rivers actually need to try to get some other type of nutrition into them just besides fish and rice. And that was a wake-up call as far as the advantages of kibble. Kibble is a main ingredient that we use on the trail. I use the meat from 10 Squared that I get that I use. then I actually got some buffalo scraps from a place down the road here near Delta that sells stuff. And, of course, fish is a big staple of their diet when it's warmer out. Try to get a lot of fat into them. Obviously, fat more towards the colder parts of the day, and then fish towards the warmer parts. Snacking them every few hours in the trail. Some dogs that might be a little bit skinnier, you might want to throw a little bit more food into them. You have to realize in these longer training runs, the dogs are going to lose weight, especially yearlings and two-year-olds. Be prepared for that. Have good dog jackets for them. And at the end of this run or any longer training run, you need to give them a few days off. And if you're doing a big run like I did, I'm giving mine at least a week off. And that doesn't mean they're not getting exercise in the yard. You know, let them run around and play with each other in the pen and stuff. But they don't need to necessarily be thrown back out on the trail right away, because it's a disadvantage for them and you as well. You have to let their bodies develop. And so what I've been doing right now is we're cooking lots of fish, fat, and we're feeding 4 to 5 times a day and just trying to build up their muscles again.
So one final question in regards to feeding on your trek there. With 37 dogs on this trek, yeah. How much food did you bring along for something like that? I know that's a big deal in planning for longer excursions, whether it be Iditarod or Quest or whatever, is to really have enough food to go around. So how much did you bring with you, Hugh?
Well, fortunately, Wayne was kind enough to cook us up some of fish when we decided to stay an extra night in Eagle. And we had bargained with him. We bought him a little present for him to enjoy. little Jim Beam action there for, you know, Bushman that can go down good once a year. They don't really have too many liquor stores in those parts. But it was a way to celebrate Thanksgiving. That was the neat part. We pulled up to his place right at Thanksgiving night, and Scarlett, his wife, who's one of the most amazing ladies I've ever met in my, you know, travels in the north, she totally had us outfitted to a T, so that was pretty awesome. They're a pretty amazing family, and their boy, Matt, I'll guarantee you, that kid's going to be something on the race course here in the next couple of years. He's a youngster, but he's going to be doing well here soon. Basically, I think we had about 5 or 6 bags of Red Paw kibble, 4 or 5 bags of meat, then some fish. And next year, to do it over again, we'd actually have a snow machine with us. Not to break trail or anything. There's no trail really to be broken, but just for supplies. I think it'd be a lot funner, a lot easier on the dogs, and we could have somebody preparing camp for us up the road a bit, you know?
Sure.
Because that is a lot of stress, that weight, especially we're double sledding, two of us, and then Jesse had his sled, you know, 450 pounds or whatever he had in there. So that's why we were caching stuff as we went. We had it all planned out that way. But, yeah, next year we're actually hoping to get a race going out there. I don't know if there's going to be, you know, how much monetarily we'll be involved in the prize money. We'll see if any sponsors come on board. But I think a lot of the folks in the Tok area are interested. And I know the Hall family was definitely interested in it. So as far as a race goes, though, this would be more difficult than Copper Basin, whatever, Cusco. It would be mushers would have to have their teams very well trained to do this, because it's quite the workout. But we would hopefully have some checkpoints and maybe chicken, then someplace around the 40-mile river area. I'm not really too sure where we'd want to do it there. I prefer to do it up in the hills where it might be a bit warmer for folks, and maybe put a tent up there with some, you know, water or what have you. But it's, you know, I think it would be advantageous for all dog mushers if we start trying to do different, smaller dog races in various parts of Alaska. If we can figure out a system where it's not going to be too difficult to set it up, and there's not going to be too much bureaucracy involved, that can really slow things down. And the beauty of the Taylor Highway is you got the trail set up and ready to go for you. The sketchy part was, though, going over American Summit. The gravel was out, the winds were up, and the runner plastic was getting shredded. So that was one of the more difficult parts. You know, yeah, there was an old set of tire tracks that I was trying to skim over with the runner plastic so we could travel smoother. But it's comparable to the trail you're going to see between, you know, Ron and Nikolai often in Iditarod. So I'm not looking for a groomed trail. I'm looking for a trail that is more realistic to what the dogs are going to see on a 1,000-mile race.
So, you know, Hugh, a lot of people are listening to this show every week. Are we saying that you're going to be a race organizer for next year?
Oh, I had a little bit of luck, you know, with a Yukon Flats race that the Cadzo families basically, you know, ran. But I donated a bit of prize money and, you know, helped get the ball rolling there. And I look at it as a way to, you know, share my love and appreciation and respect for Alaska, and not just certain parts of Alaska, but all of Alaska. So if there's any villagers, different villages that would be interested in getting a race going that was a few hundred miles that we've never raced in before as mushers, I think there would be a lot of us veteran mushers that would be all over it, because, you know, it's Alaska, and we all want to see as much of this playground as we can. But, yeah, I definitely like to put ideas in people's heads. And we were the guinea pigs this year. We went and did it. Wayne Hall's done it before. He never went both ways, though. He just was coming to do the quest or, you know, travel or whatever he is up to. But it's definitely doable, and I like early season racing. The longer the racing season for me, the better. So we'll see what happens next year.
So with that, Hugh, a race around this time of the year, you know, Thanksgiving time. First question is that feasible for a lot of mushers? Do you think that they would have the training on their dogs or the miles on their dogs, you know, just coming into to sled work and early season training like in October? Do you think that they could do a race like that? Not talking necessarily about the old grizzly veterans, but somebody like me or somebody that, you know, that's more involved in smaller races that may not be ready for a 300-miler in November.
Yeah, not necessarily November, but maybe even like early December. Yeah, rookie mushers, you know, just you have to. The key with dog racing is you can't bring dogs that aren't prepared for it. And if your dogs aren't trained up, then you shouldn't come. But, you know, if it's done properly, if we had checkpoints and the teams weren't carrying a lot of weight, I have no problem seeing rookie mushers do that. There used to be a race, I can't remember the name of it, but I believe it was in the Cantwell area. It wasn't the Cantwell Classic, but it was another race where they actually set up a race where the veteran mushers were there to help the newer mushers develop their skills and learn habits on the trail. And I would definitely want this race to be something to that effect, where we would all get together at certain points, or definitely have a dance or something in Eagle where we're all hanging out and having fun and sharing knowledge with each other, not only of, you know, the Taylor Highway and going to Eagle, but of just different stories from the trail. That's what a lot of these newer folks need to learn is you learn by listening to what others have been through, and they're going to tell you what to avoid along the way. And I think that's the beauty of some of these younger mushers, you know, hanging out with the veterans, is they're going to, just by watching how they interact with their dogs, you're going to learn a lot, I believe. But, yeah,
so
I believe that – I think not total newbies, but, you know, even if you were a total newbie and you didn't think you were ready to race, you could always volunteer to help out as a, you know, a volunteer checker or just down the trail with a snow machine helping to put in checkpoints or whatever. There's always a way to participate in this races. You don't necessarily have to be racing in them. I mean, look at Joe Reddington. That first Iditarod, that guy would have done anything to be a part of as far as being on a dog team, and he sacrificed that year to make sure that race, you know, made it to Nome, and look what's happened since then.
You know, my final question in regards to a potential race next year or whenever is the racing season right now is so bunched up in terms of mid-distance races. It's so bunched up around January, early February with the Copper Basin and the Kinnick 200 and, you know, the old Klondike is now called the Northern Lights, and all those races are all within 3 or 4 weeks of each other, the Testamina and whatnot. Do you see in the future where they could spread some of that out with new races like you're talking about? And do you think that that would help out guys that are trying to qualify for the Iditarod or whatever with having these early races instead of trying to bunch them all up in a month?
Yeah, I know. It sort of bums me out, man. I always wanted to do those races, and they're usually during the Quest time, or so I've never been able to do that race. I always wanted to do the Klondike or whatever it's called now, but unfortunately that's not possible. Or even – believe me, I'd love to do those races down in Michigan or Can-Am or what have you, but, you know, that's Iditarod season, so you have to make your choices. I definitely think a more spread-out season is beneficial to everybody. Obviously, snow years, you know, are good and bad, so sometimes when the snow ain't good, you have to cancel a race or postpone it, so that's why sometimes these races get bunched up together. That being said, I don't really look at this as just a mid-distance race. This would be quite an adventure, and I guarantee you that by doing a race like this, you are going to have a better team for, you know, Copper Basin or what have you, because the dogs are going to be used to going uphill for over an hour at a time, and they're going to not be as not traumatized, but they're not going to be as, you know, blown away by the longer runs. It's going to be more of what they're used to. So I'd say my average run rest schedule in this race was something 10 hours to 3 to 4 hour break. And that's comparable to what you're going to see in races.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, it's the end of November, or today's what, December 1st. So they're going to be a little tired now, but they've got over, you know, what, a month to heal up or rest up. And that's plenty of time. So, for me, though, it's definitely about the adventure, and that was the fun of this event.
Well, it sounds like a great time, and again, you can definitely check out some pictures on Hugh's Facebook wall. And speaking of checking things out, Hugh, we got your brand new webpage up, gypsymusher.com. I know you're going to send over some fresh photos to me pretty soon to get up on there, as well as your merchandise page is going to be up very soon. We do have the ability to order, I believe, the hoodies on there right now. I need to get with you here this week to make sure we get everything else up there. But the website's up, and I'm telling you, Hugh, you're getting a heck of a lot of fans and listeners on this show, because the numbers are going through the roof, and I'm very happy for you for that, and people are loving the knowledge you're sharing. I know you've talked about it before, about, are you giving away too much information? I don't think so. I think you're giving people that may just be fans of the sport, you know, they aren't Iditarod guys or Quest guys or whatever, but they really enjoy hearing the adventures of the life on the trail, and I think that's what you're trying to share on this show. So we've been on the air for about a month and a half. Where do you see the show developing from this point forward? I know we're getting more involved in racing and training and things like that. What is to come on the Gypsy Musher show?
I just say we try to get syndicated. How's that sound?
That sounds good to me.
Hey, man, I don't know. It's fun to talk racing and all that, but I would really, you know, dogs is what it's all about. I think it should almost be a requirement in races that when a musher gets on stage to thank their sponsors, that they talk about their dogs for 5 or 10 minutes. I think it's great. The whole you know, celebrity brings money into dog mushing, and that's just a part of the sports world nowadays. But, you know, the real stars are the dogs, and I think these dogs need to be spoken of and appreciated more. For their I mean, do people even realize what these animals are capable of doing? It just blows my mind to watch them not only pull you for 350 miles, but every time I'm stopping, they're all going nuts, man. They're all barking. I mean, the first time I saw this happen was, you know, when Lance got into Quest, and you sort of look at his dogs, and they have so much enthusiasm, and you thought, you know, he's just one of a kind, and you know, everybody just wished they could be like him. But people don't realize that everybody can be like Lance Mackey. If you find that bond with your dog, you might not necessarily be able to do what he does with his dogs, but you can have your dogs have that enthusiasm that he and other mushers have just by how you nurture their habits, how you bond with them on a daily basis. And that's what this whole trip for me was about, was stopping 250 miles into a run and having one of my two-year-old girl dogs like Goldie just going berserk and hollering and getting all the boys charged up, and having Aussie and Bodie and some of the other younger dogs, after such a long adventure, still have that enthusiasm for what they're doing. It brings tears to your eyes when you're on the trail and you are with another dog team, and say one dog team goes ahead and you hold your dog team back because you don't want to be right up against that other dog team because it will bum out the dogs in the first team. You know, whenever you're traveling with another team, you don't want to be on the other dog team's rear end because that's just not beneficial to either one of you in the long run. You want there to be a bit of a gap between you. So when I'm holding back my team to let Jesse get up, or if he holds back his team, our dogs are so enthused with what they're doing that they actually are starting to howl and stuff. You know, like, get off that brake pad, buddy. Let's get going again. And that's what I really enjoy, is just that energy of the animals. And it really feeds through you as a human, too. I mean, ever since I got back from that, adventure, I've been out in the dog yard just, really appreciating what I have this year. It's been fun.
And, you know, that's what it's all about, is that bond and that time we spend with our dogs, and that's what makes it so special. I was talking to a lady yesterday down in Canada, and she didn't know anything about mushing at all, and I was telling her very similar stories of what you just said, and she goes, wow, I had no idea what it was like. She thinks that, you know, it's like any other sport, like NASCAR or whatever, we get in and we go, but it's not. It's about that bond that we form. So I know you've mentioned time and time again that you want to make your persona about your dogs, and we do that every week. We talk about one of your dogs, and this week we're going to talk about a little guy that you took on this trip. His name is Bodie. Let's talk about Bodie a little bit.
All right, so Bodie's a yearling, black dog, so much energy, I kid you not, that to get a harness on him, it's very difficult, put it that way. Even for a guy that's been around the block like me, I really have to try to calm him. To get booties on him the first couple times, took about three people to hold him down. He's like one of those, you know, wild bucking broncos at a horse rodeo. But he's mellowed out over, you know, time. He's getting used to it. He's just got so much energy. His mother's Annie. Father's a dog named Tank that I bred up with Hans Scott's dog and know him a few years ago. I actually named Bodie after a buddy of mine, Kevin Bodie, who's the cameraman for Iditarod for the last 5-6 years, and he's also the one of the camera guys for the Seattle, you know, Seahawks and Mariners and those sports teams. And Bodie just has so much energy. It's unreal. I didn't bring his two brothers, Houdini and Harvey. They've got the same type of yearling puppy enthusiasm, but Bodie just has it to another degree. You have to be a little careful with pushing younger, yearlings, two-year-olds, because until they're about three, their bodies really aren't completely developed, I believe. Somebody might disagree with that, but I think generally speaking, I would say that was about right. But Bodie just amazing. He's definitely going to be doing some racing. I'll probably take him in Cusco or a race that won't be as strenuous physically on his body compared to, say, Copper Basin, which is a little bit more up and down. But just a black dog. Kept him towards the back of the team, wheel, maybe ahead of wheel, just to keep an eye on him. Didn't want to push him too hard. But he shined better than a lot of the, you know, veteran dogs. And he's going to be a superstar. I'm not really sure if he'll be a leader or team or wheel as he gets older, but the more I look at dogs and dog mission, I think people talk too much about leaders in their teams, and they don't realize that those other positions in the team, whether it's swing or team or wheel, are just as important. And as a musher, as a competitor, you have to make sure that you not only have enough leaders, but you have to make sure you have enough dogs for each position in that team. And that's why I feel good this year, because I've got, you know, 30-some-odd dogs to, you know, pick for different positions. And I prefer in races, typically I'd like to actually have my younger dogs a little bit further up in the team. And then as the race goes on, as they slow down, I'm going to bring them back and take my more veteran dogs and put them a little bit farther up in the team once the pace slows down a bit. But it's, you know, a lot of mushing is as much of being a psychotherapist. It's about psychology as it is about being a good cook and a good caretaker and, you know, keeping an eye on their physical shape. It's about, you know, seeing mentally how they're feeling and if they feel good about where they are in the team. But Bodie's amazing, man. I feel blessed to have him.
And you've talked a lot about that, and particularly you just mentioned Lance Mackey and how he does it. You know, he's been doing that for years, is trying to figure out the dog teams. I know that you have a lot of respect for that, not only with Lance, but other people as well, as being able to really read your dogs. Can you give one tip to newbies on how to best get inside the dog's head like you're talking about? Try to psychoanalyze it as much as you can.
Well, obviously, a lot of folks like to keep some type of treat in their pocket to help train any type of animal, really. It's always good to have some type of reward for an action that you appreciate them doing. As a brief side note, let me mention this. You know, these trappers or these folks who live in the bush, who live in dangerous trails that aren't groomed and staked, they tend to make fun of long-distance mushers. You know, they don't see why you even need trail markers. But they don't want a team, those folks who live out in the bush, that's loud and full of energy. You know why? Because that team's dangerous. They want a more subdued team. So like Jesse, who was traveling with me, he's lived in Eagle and he's lived out in the bush on and off for years. He thought it was impressive how my dogs had all that energy. But as a different style of musher, he didn't want his dogs yipping and yapping and all, you know, full of enthusiasm. Even, you know, sorely in the Norwegians, you know, I don't know if they're still doing it, but those guys would, like, have very mellow dogs that were basically almost like sitting or laying down at the starting line of races because they were used to being hooked up, and then the humans would go in and have coffee before they even left. So every musher has a different way of training. I just enjoy my style for me personally because I'm really into an exuberant type of animal. That every dog musher wants a team that's so hyper. But for me, it works. As far as one aspect of, you know, it's really not the orders you're giving these dogs on the trail that I think they're really feeding off of. It's what you're doing in your dog yard. It's what you're saying to that dog. It's what you're whispering in their ear after you feed them, telling them what a great, you know, dog they are, or it's how you give them a little scratch every now and then. It's, you know, it's the bond, man. And people that tend to do well year in, year out are the ones that can't wait to get out in their dog yard every day. And I think I'm pretty lucky in that respect because, you know, I'm living the dream and I don't really want it ever to end.
There you go. So we have about a minute left. I got to jaw you a little bit about the Bears-Packer game that you're going to. I know you and I are pretty big sports fans. We love our football. But my question to you, Hugh, is about the Chicago Bears and my team, the Vikings, who just kind of let go of Donovan McNabb. I guess there's talk in circles that he may be going to the Bears since Cutler went down.
Oh,
what do you think about that?
Oh, I didn't know that, dude. Thanks for the info. I feel like I'm reading the paper here. That'd be cool. It's funny, you know, because my boy, I was an Eagle Scout. My dad was my Scoutmaster. I spent 20 summers up in Wisconsin. So in many respects, even though I grew up in Evanston outside of Chicago, I love Wisconsin. Me and my buddies spent a lot of time up in the Wolf River and went up to the Porkies in Michigan. And I just you know, Wisconsin for me is just a great place. So I'm not just going because of the Bears-Packers game. I'm going because I've never been to Lambeau. And sports, you know, are great. But it's like one of my old bosses, Curtis Earhart, used to tell me, you know, real dog mushers only have one sport, and that's dog mushing. And that's what I'm all about these days. And as far as sports go, I'd rather shoot some hoops or play some football than watch some other guys having fun on TV doing it. So I use sports actually to sort of get, you know, pumped up maybe before I go and do something with the dogs. But I'm not necessarily a diehard fan who wins what event. I just enjoy watching a good game, you know. And whether the Bears win or the Packers, I just hope it's a good game.
Well, I'm sure it'll be electric there. It's on Christmas Day, the Bears and the Packers. You know, we went to a Bronco game, Thanksgiving a couple of years ago, and it just had a little bit different flair than your typical Sunday game at the stadium. So I'm sure it'll be a fun time. The Packers are something special this year with Aaron Rodgers. Hey. They may go undefeated. Who knows? So it'll be a good game for sure. Hugh, we'll see you next week for sure here on Gypsy
Mushroom. Hey, and remember, Robert, one thing we've learned from Denver is just watching that Tebow guy is you don't have to be that athletic to be a great leader.
And, that's exactly right.
As mushers, you know, you might not be in the best shape, and you might not be as strong as a Ken Anderson or a Ramey Smith or a Alan Moore, but that doesn't mean you can't be a great musher. I mean, being a great musher has a lot more to do with what you're doing upstairs than what type of shape you're in.
And I think Jake Berkowitz is a good testament to that. He's doing something real good there, don't you think?
Oh, I think Jake's great for the sport, and that's the beauty of the sport right now is there's a lot of young guns that are getting into the sport, and it's pretty neat to see for dog mushing. I think the more competitive these races go down to the wire with more teams, the more excitement, the more fan base, and it's just be great for everyone in the long run.
So we're looking forward to it. I'm sure all of your fans are looking forward to Iditarod and UConn Quest, and we'll keep them updated here on the Gypsy Musher. We covered a lot of good stuff today, Hugh. We talked about Iditarod. We talked about your dogs. We talked about the training that you're doing as well as this adventure you just went on. So good show. We're over by a couple of minutes, but that's okay. People can stream it on their computers or iPods or whatever they're listening to, and they'll get the whole show for sure. So, Hugh, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk next time, all right?
All right, man. Well, I'll be calling you from Tanana next week.
There you go. So the Gypsy Musher will be on the road again from Tanana, Alaska. We'll talk to you guys next time. This is Robert Forto on behalf of our host, Hugh Neff. Talk to you later. Goodbye.
Peace.